Hello, I'm Morgan Rhodes. I am writing solo this week. My companion, my co-conspirator, Oliver Wong, will be back. But you are listening to Heat Rocks. Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about hot lava, combustible material. And today, we will be revisiting D'Angelo together and taking a deep dive into voodoo.
You know what I'm saying? This is like a funk album, man. The natural progression from soul, the next step to soul was funk. Early Sly, a lot of early James Brown, a lot of early Funkadelic, Parliament, you know what I'm saying? A lot of early progression when the music was just starting to change and the culture was changing.
That is how Michael D'Angelo Archer described A Thing of Beauty Called Voodoo. The album, his second, released on New Year's Day, was a welcome sight after what was a grueling test of patience for those like myself who'd been wooed by a shy, smoldering young'un from Virginia who was quite nice with the Hammond organ. According to the album's sound mixer, Russell Elovato, the goal was to pay homage to the sounds of albums by Stevie, Marvin, JB, and Funkadelic by performing live and then recording everything to tape. To bring this concept to life, they needed both a soul and a spirit. And they had them. An old soul like D'Angelo, who was raised on gospel, but in the time of recording, had fallen in love with Sly, Jimmy, JB, and the blues. And spirit, the spirit of excellence that hovered in and around Electric Ladyland Studios, where both history and magic had been made. If this album was a color, it would be brown. Brown skin like the ancestors conjured up over 13 tracks. Brown like the dark liquor surely needed to accompany listening. Brown like Africa, the final track. Brown like the Soulquarians. Brown like me. Voodoo came into our lives at the apex of neo-soul. Heads were no longer internalizing pain, struggle, and strife, or heartache. They were singing about it, as Mama's Gun, the Colored Museum, and Firstborn Second would bear witness to. And like so many Heat Rocks discussed on this show before, this album tells us some things. Most particularly, it tells us a lot about spirituality, that it is both centered around ritual and relationship, that there's actually nothing new under the sun, and that perhaps those connected with making these tracks were servants of the spirit, like voodoo practitioners. And just like the album Star, voodoo gave us something precious, a good thing that came to those who waited. And yes, a thing of beauty. How I describe voodoo, an album released in the wee hours of the dawn of a new decade. Voodoo was the album pick of our guest today, Terrell Wallace, a.k.a. Tall Black Guy. I'm not sure who to credit for my discovery of our guest's music. I'd like to say I was always in the know, but then again, I always like to say that. But in the spring of 2012, I happened upon an EP called The Brazilian Chronicles and was changed when I heard this track. Several plays later, I had the opening song for my set that night. I broke O Femme de Viagem on the air, the studio phone started blowing up, and a fanship was born. Tall Black Guy was built in the Motor City, spent a good while in the UK, and is back stateside making his particular blend of magic that tastemakers get lit for. Influenced by Madlib and Primo, he's reimagined songs for Moonchild, Diggs Duke, Miles Bonney, and other cool kids, and in the process racked up a gazillion plays and streams on these internets. Over the last couple of years, he's been one of the featured guests at Jazzy Jeff's Playlist Retreat, a musician summer camp where some of the best and brightest converge to collaborate. To put it mildly, he's good with the beats. Real good with the beats. Welcome to Heat Rocks, Tall Black Guy.
How you doing? Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
So glad to have you. I have to ask you, how did you come to know this album? It came out 2000. Tell me where you got it, when you got it,
Okay, so this is in 2000. Yeah, I had just graduated high school. During that time, I mean, I was really into like a lot of the underground stuff, so like Rockets and all that stuff. So I knew of D'Angelo's work from, you know, Brown Sugar and stuff like that, but I just seen the album, went to the store and bought it and was blown away. And I think I listened to it for literally like at least 6 months, like just nonstop. I don't even know how many times I played the player joint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that day, this album was crazy. And then right after that, then Common's Like Water for Chocolate came out. Then Mama's Gun came out. Then Welcome to Detroit came. I mean, like, it was just so much music around that time, though. But this one definitely stood out, at least for me anyway. It's like the first of the batch of the mini albums that came out that year.
Sure. If you can recall, what were your very first impressions? Like the first thing you said about the album, what were your first, like, initial, first play, first listen?
I mean, I just thought musically this was some other stuff. You know what I mean? Because there was a lot, you know, because back then people, you know, like at least in the soul stuff, they weren't really heavily relying on the live instrumentation. There's a lot of program stuff, so. Like, it just sounded, like, really organic. And then, obviously, when you hear D'Angelo sing over it, I mean, it was, that marriage between the music and his voice was just absolutely insane. And then you find out later, like, they spent, like, anywhere from five to seven years just studying before they even actually made the record.
Sure. There was some time because heretofore we had Brown Sugar. And I remember thinking at the time, because I loved Brown Sugar, we actually had DJ Mona Lisa, she guested with us, and that was her pick. So we spent a lot of time unpacking Brown Sugar. And there was a long wait, at least to me, from Brown Sugar to Voodoo. How much were you into Brown Sugar, the album, when that came out?
So that had to come out, what, 94?
95.
That would have been like in eighth grade or something like that.
Sure. So it wasn't as attached then.
It wasn't as attached, and my understanding wasn't as much as it was when I got a little bit older.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I knew dope stuff, but, you know, it really didn't capture me like that. I'm trying to think even what was even cracking at that time in 95. I think I was still heavily into, like, Snoop real heavy.
Okay.
I still like soul music, but I remember at that time, like, Snoop, like, the Doggy Style joint was, like, that was my ends all to be all right there.
Sure.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day.
You talked about some of the production in the album, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. But first, I want to ask you about the album art, because we find sometimes when we sit down and talk to people that stuff has a significance. This is the time when buying records and buying CDs was a big thing. Did you have any impressions of the album art itself, either the front side or, of course, the pictures on the back?
I think at the time when it came out, I really didn't understand the artwork itself. Like, because I had bought the CD, so.
Okay.
So I remember in the insert, like, it had some beautiful women in it. I do remember that. But on top of that, it was like some type of script or some type of font of different things that they were saying in the back. I couldn't really tell what it was. I thought it was dope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then obviously when, like, later, then they showed, like, the sessions and what they did to actually go to make the record. Can't remember exactly what. Did they go to Brazil to make that?
I think they made it here, but I think they drew largely on, of course, the title of the album is Voodoo, which is a spiritual practice developed from the traditions of the African diaspora, of course.
Right.
And has a great tie between Caribbean and African traditions and Catholicism and such. A largely misunderstood religion, and maybe a surprise for some people because D'Angelo grew up in a religious
He's a Pentecostal. He's a Pentecostal.
Right. Yep, a Hebrew Pentecostal. And so I remember thinking, looking at the artwork, like, oh, because it looks like there's a part where he's dancing, which reminds me a lot of, you know, the scriptures, David dancing before the Lord. But also, too, you've got, you know, a woman that's, her eyes are closed in a trance-like movement.
Right.
And then and then drums, which is something I do want to get into, is the drums and percussions on this album. I know you and I've known you for a long time. And I love how many drums appear in your remixes and how you tend to pull drums from what you sample. What appealed to you about this album musically, specifically in the areas of percussions?
I mean, if you got this album around that time and you were just learning how to make beats, Questlove did a great job of letting you listen to the album and get all the kicks and snares, percussion. I mean, I think he knew what he was doing when he did it.
Sure.
And but yeah, just the textures of the drums and the different snares and all that type of stuff. I know on Chicken Grease, in the beginning of it, it's a snare that is like famous for like a lot of like more the major mainstream pop songs, but it came off of Chicken Grease. That's the one right there.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's used that snare before, yo. Let me tell you about the Chicken Grease. Yes, it's been on so many. It's been on. I don't even want to speak his name. I mean, we already.
Sure.
But Chingy used it. I mean, it was. It's so many people that have used that snare. Trackmasters, they put that snare on fire. So you know. But yeah, like the whole album, it was just full of gems.
And that song, of course, D'Angelo and also James Poyser, who is essential. To the Soulquarians. For those that don't know about the Soulquarians, they squatted up there at Electric Lady Studios, which is very famous for Jimi Hendrix and his albums. And they were comprised of a lot of talents, including Questlove, we got Bilal, we've got Roy Hargrove, Common, Erykah Badu, Poyser, Pino Palladino, and such. And they got together and produced not just Voodoo, because they're all over Voodoo, and that also includes J Dilla, as you mentioned, but they also did The Roots' Things Fall Apart. I know you, one of your picks to talk about was Common's Like Water for Chocolate. They were behind that album. They were behind Slum Village's fantastic Volume 2. And once you know all of those albums that they produced, there's a lot of common themes amongst all those albums. Percussion is one. You mentioned at the top of the interview, instrumentation, which is heavy. Saxophone, Roy Hargrove is all over this. What do you hear in the album, if any, that has an influence on your sound and your production, how you do music?
For Voodoo?
Yeah.
I would say the instrumentation for sure, because I kind of employed it a little bit later.
Sure.
But yeah, I could definitely say probably the live instrumentation is a big thing. Like I try to do it a lot more now. I still sample, but it's more for like texture and button. Like all the other stuff is usually either I add it or I'll get some, you know, a musician to come in and add in the flavors. It was great songs too, though. It was really great songs.
Can you talk a little bit more about when you say texture? What do you mean by that?
Texture, I mean, because the thing is, like, when you have these records that came, you know, before me, like, you know, in like 1975, and I'm listening to this Ahmad Jamal record, like, that recording right there, like we can't reduplicate that, but the texture of it and the chords and all that stuff is a good base to start with.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, you can at least be influenced by it to create something that can be like it, but you can't do the same thing. But I just like, I'm obsessed with that, with a lot of the 70s stuff. You know what I mean? Cause the sound of it is just so, you know, it's just so crisp and clean, you know what I mean? And then warm, it's the warmth to it.
I mean, these songs are long by comparison to today. Playa Playa is 7 minutes long, right? Yeah. The shortest song on here is still like 4.5 minutes, and that would be considered a long song today.
Oh, yeah, of course. So,
you know what I'm saying? A really long song. Like, sort of, you know, if we can get 3 minutes out of an artist now, we praise God for that.
These
songs are very long, and I think that has to do a lot with the instrumentation. And I want to get into some of these tracks, because you mentioned that you listened to it incessantly when you first got it.
Yeah.
Did you listen to it cover to cover without skipping a track?
Oh, of course, yes.
Okay.
I still can do that today. Shoot.
Really?
You can still do the day. You can still listen to Voodoo today and still not skip. That's what you call a great album.
Absolutely. No disagreement there. Was there a song that stuck to you more than others?
Oh, man. Probably Spanish Joint.
Ooh.
Spanish Joint was one, and then I just love The Line. The Line was my joint. Yeah, The Line was my joint. One of the songs, I remember I am taking the lyrics and writing to a girl. But
okay, we got to hear that. Listen to our black guy. This Heat Rocks is a safe space for confessions. All right, you got to tell us about that.
It was One More Again.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I ended up taking some of I don't know off the top of my head, but I remember I ended up lifting some of the first verse to write to my then girl I was digging or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some things have changed since the last to see you. Some good,
some for the bad, baby, baby, baby. How'd that work out for you, brother?
Oh, it was good. It worked.
Okay. All right, then. Listen. Success.
Right.
Spanish Joint was actually the second song I fell in love with. It is, tempo-wise, it's different from a lot that we hear on mm-hmm. here. And I think I thought, because of the title, that it was going to be more Spanish.
Yeah.
But it's so soulful. Of course, this
it's
is
soulful, yeah.
Super, super soulful. This is not to say that Spanish music isn't soulful, but it sounds very yeah. much R&B soulful in a way that I wasn't expecting based on, you know, based on the title. But I know yeah. that there's a lot of, you know, diasporic music is diasporic music, and there's a lot of crossover between Afro-Cuban, Afro-Peruvian, Afro-Spanish. Mm-hmm. You yourself have dabbled into to Brazilian music many, many times in your own projects. What appealed to you about Spanish Joint?
I mean, it was just the percussion, you know, and the tempo was a lot different than anything he had released, you know, that he released before and
sure.
then on this album.
Right.
When the bass comes in.
Mm.
And then they just let the rhythm kind of catch you for a little bit, and then he comes in with the verse. Whenever it rains, feel the sway. Little something to get me through the day. Yeah, it was, yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites.
There's a lot of that on this album, and I think the patience with where the song starts, and mm-hmm. even how D'Angelo himself rides the beats with his own vocals has a lot to do with the fact that this is live instrumentation.
Yeah.
It's the time that you take and the patience that you have because you've got all those instruments and musicians in a room.
Yeah.
Whereas now, after a few, you know, a couple of bars and maybe some oohs and ahs, that's the song. Which is hard
yep.
because you know you only got 3 minutes anyway. So this is, I thought this was a great build of the song. Spanish Joint is one of my favorites. I played it down on the radio. I'm sure my listeners were probably like, please, please, Morgan, please don't play Spanish Joint again. But it was one of my favorites. The song that I did listen to this cover to cover, I bought this album at Virgin Records.
Nice.
I didn't buy it when it came out. I bought it on my birthday. I got a gift card to Virgin Records. My birthday is in February. So
right.
I couldn't wait to get this album, and I listened to it, but I got stuck on Great Day in the Morning.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Again, that song yeah. in particular, I hear J Dilla all over, and that drum. It isn't just that it's drums. It's a particular type of Dilla drum, as you well know, which is so precious and heavy, not overdone, but just enough to accentuate the point. It's like, it's almost like J Dilla puts everything in bold. His drums, right, put everything in bold.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he coached Quest to a T.
Oh, my gosh.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
He coached him to a T, and Quest, he got it. Because, you know, Quest was more on the grid, so he didn't even understand, you know, a little bit more lackadaisical, you know, almost like you're kind of lazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it makes sense. I mean, that's what actually sounds good to the natural ear, you know, when you really think about it.
When you're looking for things to sample, Is your attraction the drums? Is that your first point of entry?
My ear now goes straight to chords.
Really?
I'm a chord fanatic. Yes, drums are, they're the color for sure, but I particularly look for the chords because then I know where I'm going to take the drums. You know what I mean? But I'm in search for those chords that make you, you know, just cringe and like, yo, what is that? Because it does some type of major to minor type of situation, you know what I mean? It's just the heartfelt of it, though. You know what I mean? I'm really attracted to chords, for sure.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Heat Rocks. Don't go anywhere.
Friendship is tough, especially when you're constantly slaying carnivorous hell beasts bent on your destruction.
Hey, make sure to clean the tub. I might actually need to shower today.
Oh, don't give me that. You've been wearing the same pair of track pants since Tuesday. I mean, they still have the size sticker on the leg.
Yeah, I do. Well, still, I was thinking today might be the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's still alive! Kill it!
I don't have any weapons!
Get it with the shower head! Shit. My burrito got some gunk on it.
But that's just Fairhaven. We make it work. Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Nearly two decades ago, Commander Data sacrificed his life.
The Greatest Discovery is also about Star Trek Picard.
Jesse Thorne won't let us stay on the network unless we do all the Star Trek series, and so here we are, doing a show about maybe our favorite Star Trek character of all time.
If you're excited to watch the new Star Trek Picard series and you'd like some veteran Star Trek podcasters to watch it along with, we're your guys. Sorry you're stuck with us.
What the hell are you doing out here, Picard? Saving the galaxy.
So subscribe to The Greatest Discovery. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts.
Or at MaximumFun.org.
Let's get back into the album and talk a little bit about how successful this album was. Not only was it a personal jam for me and you and most of Black America, but the critics loved it. All right. It got the Grammy for Best R&B Album that year. Rolling Stone has listed it as one of the 500 greatest albums of all time. Pitchfork has it as one of the top 200 albums of the 2000s. So he burst on the scene with Brown Sugar. He gave us Voodoo, and then we waited.
For 15 years? What was it, about 15, 16 years or something like that?
A 15-year wait for Messiah. We always joke around the music business that there are very few artists that can afford to take breaks in between albums like this. And if you take a break, they have to be fantastic. Sade is one. Sade does something every 8 or 9 years.
That's fine.
She doesn't bother you?
She can do that. No.
But one of the things, one of the changes between Brown Sugar and Voodoo, which was significant, is he started playing the guitar.
Yes, he did.
He started playing the guitar. Brown Sugar's claim to fame, or his particular introduction to us all, was the world of the Hammond B3 organ. And if you didn't grow up in church or grew up outside of church, you wouldn't be as familiar with that instrument. In an interview, he said that when he was coming up in the church, he was told, when you get up there and play, you play without no form or no fashion, which in layman's terms is you just play. You just imbue the spirit that comes within you, and you don't and you don't do it for yourself. Between Brown Sugar and Voodoo, he learns a lot about the guitar, specifically by hanging out with Jesse Johnson and Raphael Sadiq. You can hear a lot of guitar on here, but I think where you hear it the most is Left and Right.
My flows remarkable. Doc walk like Kane from Kung Fu round the globe. Throw obstacles, I'll hurdle them. Herman whack MCs.
Now at the time, Method Man and Redman were killing.
Yeah, they just had dropped the Rock Roller.
They sure had. Yeah. So it was nice to hear them on this production. Left and Right, he said, one of the things present on this album was a lot of rock chords. He wasn't as familiar with the bass guitar, but was getting into the bass guitar and then the guitar. Left and Right is one of my favorite songs on here, and I didn't think I could love it any more until I heard it reinterpreted.
By who?
By a beat maker and a producer named Red Astaire.
And if you dream to be free, I can take you there, just follow me. Baby, I won't. And if you dream to be free, I can take you there, just follow me.
Wow.
And if you dream to be free, I can take you there, just follow me. And if you dream to be free,
a lot of us were playing that on the air for a while. That thing bangs from start to finish. It's interesting, the parts of the song that he took from it, and he released it on a record label called Gam Records.
Wow.
And they do a lot of interpolations of songs, and that was one of my favorites. He took it to a different, really different direction.
Yeah. Sounded like he got it off of the live album. That's what it sounded like, the vocals.
It does sound like that. Let's talk a little bit about D'Angelo and him as a sex symbol. And let's talk about that in relationship to Untitled. Did you see the video for Untitled?
Oh, of course. It was a great video.
It was a great video. But I remember
a dope song too.
A very, very dope song. I need a moment. You know what I mean? Just thinking back about it. Give me a moment, Christian, to pull myself together. There's a great debate about, did D'Angelo really want this to become a sex symbol outside of that? Was this meant to be that, or was it unintended? I think it depends on your perspective and how you feel about that. I think on the one hand, coming from a religious background as we know about him, and as what we've heard about him being a really shy guy, it's easy to believe that this might not have been his decision. This might not have, he might have been in favor of that. But however, the song is called Untitled, How Does It Feel? And the subject matter leads me to believe that at the very least, he knew that this was going to be a very intimate, sexy, sexual song. Maybe he didn't intend the video. But I like the song because of its similarity to a lot of Prince songs. And as we know about D'Angelo, he is a huge Prince fan. And in fact, he covered Prince's She's Always in My Hair.
Always in My Hair, yeah.
There are similarities. And I want us to listen to both versions, if we could listen to both.
Never mind.
Hmm.
love the two. I think D'Angelo's has sort of a grimy a grimy element that takes it to a different place. But he has said on more than one occasion that Prince was a heavy, heavy influence on him.
To make your point, to run your point on that, she's in my hair joint. It's a remix out by one of my good friends, 14KT.
Ooh.
That I have to send you this joint. But when I say that KT captured all of the emotion in that joint, yo, oh, that joint is so sweet.
Did
I
gotta
send
it
to you, yo. I have to send it to you.
Ooh.
You gotta listen to that.
That's fire. What do you think this album offers that we can't get today in production, or that production today is lacking, in your own opinion?
This album would be kind of hard to make now because people, the patience.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you ready to get something now. It's like they sat with this record, you know, with all this stuff for 5 to 7 years before they even released.
Right.
You know what I mean? And in today's time, that would be too long. Like, like as soon as you put out a record, when's the next one?
Right.
And that's in like 3 months. When's the next one? When's the next one? You know what I mean? So it's just everything now is so disposable. You know, you don't let records just, you don't sit and breathe with records for over a year, I mean 6 months, let alone a year or even more though. You know what I mean? So
I think also too, because of the fact that we're not patient. I mean, patience is one thing, but we're not patient as listeners.
No, not at all.
If you're not back in a couple of years, we are quick to declare you washed, mm-hmm. and we're quick to move on. And I can't remember the last album that I've sat with and listened cover to cover. This one to me has really no skippable tracks. But if there is a track on here that you think is a sleeper that doesn't get the attention that it's due, or doesn't get as much hype, is there a track on here that you think doesn't get the attention that it's due?
No, I don't think you can really single out any one track. For me, my own personal opinion, I think you have to listen to it from song 1 to song 13. Like you have to do that. You have to do yourself justice, and you have to listen to this record from front to back.
I think you're so full with the first 12 tracks that by the time you get to Africa, you're just so worn out because the album is just so much fire when you get there.
Yeah.
But Africa's not the one to skip. It's gorgeous.
Skip it.
It's the benediction.
Yeah.
It's the benediction. You have been in a service with D'Angelo, with the Soulquarians. You've been with Method Man, Redman, Angie Stone, Roy Hargrove, Raphael Sadiq. And by the time you get to this, it is D'Angelo pronouncing the benediction on this album. He's given everything. It is his prayer. And it very, very much feels like a complete work. I had the opportunity to see him while he was pushing Messiah. We'll talk a little bit about Messiah, but
what?
I was in the bleeders. You know, I'm not ashamed to say I had one of the cheap tickets. I mean, I was so far back, I couldn't even see my future, okay? But at some point, the way that he broke the band down, it became two concerts. It was just D'Angelo with the band, and it was just the band. And both elements were so full that it was like it could have been just one group, the Vanguard, which is his band for Messiah, and it could have been just D'Angelo. And he did it so, the way that he ended the show was, he had the band, and one band member left one at a time until it was just him. So each singer left, and then the drummer left, and then the bass player left until it was just him. And he did a really long ad lib. It might have been a 10 or 15 minute ad lib with just him and the band, just the instrumentation. And so it drew me right back into voodoo and the making of voodoo and all these elements that we've been talking about. And then my sadness, because I thought, I don't know that we'll have another moment like this, another album like this, which is just full, for good, for bad, or for whatever. I think this is a moment in time where, you know, we won't get back there again. Did you find yourself as engaged with Messiah as this?
This is the thing. I like it just because I'm a fan. You know what I mean? And I had actually got some of those songs, because, you know, it's a lot of those, some of those songs are like over 10 years or more. And I remember I had some of them, you know, because, you know, obviously he was putting everybody, he was getting everybody's hopes up about, you know, possibly putting out the new record. You know what I mean? So I just kept on that hope. Then when I actually listened to it, like, I love it for the instrumentation. It's even crazier than Voodoo. The only part I'm not really enjoying is the fact that you cannot hear what he's saying.
Right.
I can't hear what he's saying. He's not very clear. His clarity is off.
It's very muted. And I've been wanting to ask if I ever had a chance to sit down with him. Was that on purpose? The sound is very muted. And I didn't know if it was supposed to feel like an echo, because it sounds like an echo. Yeah. And it is really hard to figure out what he said. I mean, I love, my jams on there are obviously A Thousand Deaths and The Charade. And I think a lot of what was going on in his world and his observation of what was going on in culture.
Prayer,
politics, and society. So it very much feels like an echo. And of course, the songs are way shorter than this.
Yep.
But to your point, I'm a tried and true D'Angelo fan.
Yeah, I mean, you can't not be. So with that, you have to support this brother. Even, you know, I could still deal with him taking as long as time. Now, do I want something else that you can actually hear him? Of course.
But sure.
I'm cool with him just doing those two records. He's made one of my top five albums of all time, though.
You know, really?
So, oh, yeah.
So Voodoo's in your top five?
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
Can I ask about some of the others?
I would have to think about that because it moves around a bit.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But Voodoo stays on
Voodoo's,
the list.
Voodoo's going to always stay in there. It has to.
Was this album right on time? Was it ahead of its time? Or is it timeless? Just when you think of Voodoo in general.
You can't. Up until that time, up until 2000, I mean, there wasn't really, I mean, outside like the stuff in the 70s, you know what
I
mean? Like, but I'm just saying, I'm born in the 80s. So like anything from my generation upwards, we had never heard nothing like that before.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And, I mean, it's a timeless joint for sure. But at the time when it came out, I mean, it was, you know, at least in the soul and the, you know, what dope hip hop was at that time. This fit right into the mix.
Right into the mix. And it still goes. And
yes.
So in my opinion, it's timeless because to your point, as you said, you know, you can go back and listen to this right now and it still goes. I put this on, in preparation for this chat, and it sounded just as fresh as when I heard it, when it came out, January 11th of 2000.
When's the last time you listened to this album?
Today, in prep
today
for the chat.
Today was the last time it was prep for today. You haven't listened to it any other time other than that?
Oh, no. I always listen to it because, as I said, I played Spanish Joint on the radio and as a part of my set in every station I've been on, and I've been on four, okay?
Right.
And everywhere that I've gone, Spanish Joint was always, always, always a part of it. And I love Send It On. I love The Root. My favorite on here is Great Day in the Morning. And that's just a jam that gets played all the time. It's a mood album. You know, when I'm feeling, you know, a certain way or feeling really melancholy, or I want to think, or even if I want to write, I play this album. D'Angelo said in one interview that some of the best musicians come from the church. And I think
I can say that.
Yep. I grew up in the church too. And I know a lot of people that have, you know, made that transition. You know, there used to be a time where you didn't want to tell anyone that you were playing secular music.
Secular music.
Secular music was just, that was not cool. But I do think that there is a lot to be said about growing in the church and learning how to play church music and making that transition. And no matter what album, be it Messiah, Voodoo or Brown Sugar, you still hear that Hammond B3 and those gospel chords.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to describe this album in three words, what would they be?
Can I curse?
Yes.
Awesome as shit.
I love it. I love it. Tall Black Guy with us, joining us to talk about D'Angelo Michael Archer and this thing of beauty called Voodoo. So glad we had a chance to sit down and talk to you about this. Can you let us know what you're working on now? What's coming up next for you?
I have to put together this instrumental. It's an intern between my actual official record. I have to put together something for Fab Beats. So I'm going to be a part of this producer series called Baker's Dozen.
Okay.
And basically, it's just like unreleased instrumentals I've had, you know, I've never put out, or stuff I've put out and don't know, you know, obviously because of the way how music goes, where you put it out and then it kind of falls to the wayside. So I'm just putting it to a collection of joints I had in all on one record.
Where can people get in touch with you on socials? What are your social media handles?
Twitter is Sir Tall Black Guy. Instagram is Tall Black Guy Productions. Facebook is Facebook.com/ Tall Black Guy Productions. Pretty much, if you just Google Tall Black Guy Productions, I'll come right up. That's it.
Tall Black Guy.
I'm on all of them. Instagram, SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook, everything.
Tall Black Guy representing the city of Detroit. It was a wonderful day when I came to know his music as I was a DJ there on KPFK. It has blessed me as it will bless you. So find him on iTunes, Bandcamp, and all digital stations and get into what he's doing. Thank you so much for being with us to talk about this gorgeous album, Voodoo.
Thank you, Sister Rose, for having me on the show.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.